Warning. On this podcast, we take the cases seriously, but not ourselves.
Although, we may attempt to lighten the mood at times.
Our episodes contain graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. You did something last night that really upset me.
What now?
So you got a new packet of biscuits to try. You got a packet of lemon Jaffa cakes.
Yuzu lemon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you took a bite out of it.
Yeah.
And to me, with a biscuit, is it like a smaller one, like a Jaffa cake?
Yeah.
You have two options. You bite half of it. Or you eat the whole thing.
Yeah.
You took a bite, a three quarters bite out of the biscuit.
Right. I usually just put it in. But I knew I'd be giving you a bit to try.
Yeah.
Because it's the yuzu lemon. We haven't tried that one yet.
Right. Yeah. So why couldn't I have half if that was the case?
Well, I thought it were half. But you could have had your own fucking Jaffa cake.
I could have. But that's not the point I'm making.
But
three quarters of a bite. What kind of a fucking animal
on,
are you?
Hang on. So your issue is that I didn't give you half.
No. It's not about that. I wasn't even expecting any biscuit.
No.
Jaffa cake. It's kind of a weird word. Is it a biscuit or not? You know what I mean?
No, it's not a fucking biscuit.
It's a weird one.
It's a little cake.
Yeah.
But I gave you, say, a quarter of the Jaffa cake.
Yeah.
And you bit into it.
I bit
and
half.
And gave me a bit back.
I followed the rules. Doesn't matter the size of it. Either bite half or a whole thing.
And because I'm always hot-handed.
Yeah.
The chocolate would just melt. It'd been in my hands too long.
Yeah.
So then my fucking hands were all covered in chocolate. It looked like I'd been sticking my finger up my ass.
Mm.
You should have just ate the quarter I'd give you.
I'm not going to eat your manky melted chocolate side of the biscuit.
Right.
Or cake in this.
Is that why?
What?
Is that why you only bit into it and gave me a bit back?
I didn't actually look at it because when I took it off you, I held like the side of it so my fingers didn't get chocolatey.
Mm.
I'm very funny about that. Right. I don't like having dirty fingers.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm. No, but I'm being serious. This actually really bothered me that you did that.
Right.
I've got a very nice life, so things like this are an issue for me.
So when you see me try and eat a whole sausage roll and I only get three quarters of it in my mouth, are you pissed?
Well, I'm pissed that you would attempt three quarters. At the very most, half. For me, it's not even... A sausage roll is a different situation. Yeah. You take little bites out of it. You don't try and deep throat the sausage roll.
Well, I don't do it anymore.
No.
Because after the last time I nearly died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're the opposite. You hate how I eat a biscuit. Because I take smaller bites.
Yeah, you're like a fucking ferret.
Like pretty much anything I eat, you get annoyed at me.
Actually, no. Right. Megan's spirit animal, I don't care what she says, is a fucking hamster. She sits there nibbling and then all of a sudden shovels a dollop in and she leaves it in the side of her mouth and then she breaks bits off and chews it on the other side.
A dollop?
And just leaves this fucking pouch of food on one side of her mouth. It's fucking disgusting.
Sometimes, you know what happens to me? I get a bit too optimistic. You know, like say if I'm eating a sandwich.
Yeah.
And you know, you have that final bite.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that's a perfect amount. It's too much. It's too big. And then I'm kind of trapped. Like my jaw is kind of almost stuck and I can't chew it properly.
Like the Victorian death with the billiard ball.
A little bit, yes. There's so many times when we're sat there eating and I've like put the last bite in my mouth and then I'm like, please don't look over at me because I'm struggling.
I noticed.
I'm fighting for my life.
10 years I've noticed. This big fucking, it looks like you got a billiard ball in the side of your fucking face.
For the amount of shit that spews from my mouth, I've got actually a very small jaw.
Yeah, it doesn't really open.
No. Yours unhinges.
Yeah.
You've got a big mouth on you.
I have.
But I mean, obviously the mortals know that.
Well, no, because a listener listening to this would automatically assume you're the loud mouth and I'm the quiet one.
Would they, yeah?
I'm the succulent one.
Succulent.
Succulent?
You said this the other day to me. You called me succulent. And I was like, what do you mean? I said, thank you, but I don't know what you mean.
You don't know what succulent means?
No. No, in whatever meaning whatever way you're meaning it, I don't know what you mean. You never actually addressed it when I asked you.
Maybe I'm getting the word wrong.
Can you define what you're...
When I called you the suck... Oh, no, that was it. Yeah, I was calling you like a groveler.
Oh, that's what... Yes, you were trying to say like subservient.
No. Never heard that word in my life, so no.
Subordinate? Was that it?
No.
Well, what do you mean by groveler then?
Succulent.
Again, you're using the wrong word. If it's not subservient or subordinate, I'm not quite sure where you're heading with it.
No idea.
We'll move on.
Yeah.
Move on. Anyway, control yourself. Eat a biscuit properly, will you, for fuck's sake.
Right, so we got shout out. Two shout outs.
We do indeed.
So first one is Tabitha.
Tabitha, yeah.
What? What was that?
I was saying how you say it.
Tabitha.
Tabitha.
That's how you say it?
Tabitha.
Right.
Yeah.
So, the only thing what comes to my mind is, you know when you get like this rich, probably British family, you know, who live in London and they've got a big house.
Swallowing around that London.
Yeah. And then they have a cat. It's usually like a British Shorthair or a fucking Russian Blue.
Mm-hmm.
And they call it Tabitha.
Yeah.
They always have a cat called Tabitha.
Tabitha, come here.
Yes. Tabitha, supper's ready.
Oh, Tabitha, would you like some milk? Would you like a bowl of cream?
So do we call them Mortal Kitty?
Well, what about Tabby? I know it's a different type of cat.
Tabitha, Tabby.
Tabby.
That goes.
Tab.
Yeah.
Tabs. But then again, tabs. Tabs means something different to you. Tabs,
oh, yeah,
is ear.
She might have big ears.
Yeah. Oh.
You don't want to insult her by calling her tabs.
Yeah.
Or lugs.
So we'll stick with Tabby.
Tabby.
Tabby or Russian Blue. We could just call her Blue.
What?
We just go further away from the point. We'll call her Blue.
Just Blue.
Blue. Blue Mortal. Dabba-dee, dabba-die.
That's what I was thinking of, that song.
Mm.
Yeah, perform that at school.
What?
You know this.
No, I don't. Like an assembly or something.
Yeah.
Can I have more information? I know we're straying from the point here, but can you just quickly...
Me and three mates.
Yeah.
We'd meet up on our break.
Oh. What?
We'd meet up on our break and rehearse a dance routine.
Oh, yeah, we have to be prepared.
And would keep playing the song over and over again. I knew the word. I have told you this because I know the words off by heart.
This is not ringing a bell, but I am delighted right now. I'm really enjoying this. The visual I'm getting.
Well,
did you have the tracksuits?
Well, we didn't perform it.
What?
I got detention and got suspended.
I thought you just said you performed it.
Did I say I performed it?
I think so. I may be wrong. I'm pretty sure
you
said...
Well, we rehearsed it.
Right.
To perform it.
You performed it in private.
But it was going to be a thing.
Yeah, you were going to be the next big thing.
Like, the teachers let us use the classroom and everything.
Did you use the tables as a stage?
No.
Oh.
We moved the tables, so we had a stage.
You need the space.
Oh, we did.
Yeah.
Oh, we were busting some moves.
Mm.
Yeah, I was like... It was in like year 6, I think.
Yeah.
So it'd have been like...
I don't know what that means.
11.
Right.
You're in your last year of junior school.
Okay.
So it'd have been about 11.
And were you any good?
I thought we were great.
Yeah. No, I have faith in you. I'm sure you were brilliant.
Yeah. There were me and three others.
Hmm.
And then I fucked it up for everyone.
Oh, it was just you who got detention?
I can't remember. I think it was suspension.
Oh, okay.
I think I was suspended.
Yeah.
But I was the star of the show. I was the main one, so it didn't work without me.
Oh, well done. Fuck's sake.
You know.
They could have had a career. That could have been the start of their career.
Yeah, we could have been the next Arctic Monkeys.
Well.
Beatles.
Well, you might have been the first Arctic Monkeys back
then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You might have beat them to it.
We could have been a music band called Dirty Northern Bastards.
Oh, could you imagine?
World were our oyster, like.
Really was.
So, next up, we have MJ.
Well, MJ is no longer alone, as she has joined the Mortals on Patreon.
Yeah.
I thought I heard her cry just the other night. It was just the notification that she joined Patreon.
And because she's joined our Patreon, she's clearly a smooth criminal.
That's the thing. She loves the true crime, as she herself is also a smooth criminal.
Not giving us the full name, they clearly don't care about us.
Good one.
How do you think that makes us feel?
She's going to make a change. She's going to make it right by joining Patreon.
She's dangerous.
I remember the time that she signed up for Patreon.
She's bad.
The way she makes me feel through her support is just, it's uncanny.
She's not going to stop until she gets enough.
Again, that's why she signed up.
She's scared of the man in the mirror.
I've already done that one.
Oh, bollocks. She don't care if you're black or white.
She doesn't. No, she's very inclusive. There's not a discriminatory bone in her body.
And then for the last two, yeah. So she knows what she wants. Love never felt so good.
Mm-hmm.
And then beat it. So with MJ, it also stands for mini ejaculation. Beat it.
I beg your fucking pardon.
You know, like when you're wanting to have a mess, but you're in a hurry.
Right.
So you have a mini ejaculation.
Trying to just bang one out quickly.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Mini ejaculation.
Mini ejaculation. I think they were some good shout outs right there. What do you reckon? We had fun with that one.
Well, I don't know any Michael Jackson songs off by heart, so I had to have a list of his songs. I had to Google Michael Jackson songs.
The man had some fucking hits. He really did.
Yeah, but there's some on there I've never heard of, you know.
You said you'd never heard of Human Nature.
Blood on the No.
You know Blood... Right, after this, I'll play you some of the songs. I guarantee you know them.
Right, I'll just name a few I've never heard of. Human Nature, Who Is It? Blood on the Dance Floor, Jam, PYT, In the Closet.
I play that, right, In the Closet is the one with Naomi Campbell in the video.
Oh. Well, we all know my favourite is Dirty Diana. Nothing is going to touch that one.
It is a great song, and underrated.
No one, I've never heard anyone else say it's their favourite.
Same for me. Love that song. You're the only other person I've heard, like, really fucking praise it.
Mm.
Great song. Anyway, thank you, Blue and MJ. We appreciate you. And as always, guys, if you want your episodes early and ad-free, head on over to Patreon and join Michael Jackson over there and Russian Blue.
We're hungry.
Neil's hungry. So sponsor Neil so he can go get a sausage roll. And if you don't feel like making a commitment to Patreon, please consider leaving us a rating or review. It does really help the podcast. If you're into true crime, and especially if you have a deep appreciation for made-for-TV movies that bring real stories to life, you're going to love Residue. Chrissy Champagne is the girl behind the mic, a true crime fan who grew up on Lifetime thrillers and VHS crime dramas. Chrissy brings deep research, storytelling, and just the right amount of commentary. Residue tells the real true crime stories that inspired those unforgettable movies. In A Cry for Help, she dives into the heartbreaking case of Tracy Thurman, a woman who fought back after years of abuse, whose husband nearly killed her, and whose legal battle exposed how police and systems often failed domestic violence victims. And in Small Sacrifices, she explores the horrifying Diane Downs case, a mother who shot her 3 children. Diane tried to blame a stranger, but the truth unraveled. The trial became one of the most shocking moments in true crime and TV movie history. If you love movies that are based on true story and crave the truth behind them, this is your next binge. Follow Residue wherever you get your podcasts.
So, what you got for us today?
Today, Neil, we are going to be talking about the Sharp family murders.
Okay. Sharp.
Sharp.
Okay, you're saying it different to me.
Sharp.
Sharp, like a sharp object.
Sharp. Sharp, like a sharp knife, but with an E on the end.
But you're saying like sharp.
Sharp. That's just me voice.
Sound like Stephen Hawking.
Sharp.
Sharp.
Sharp. Sharp. Do I say it weird?
Yeah.
Sharp. It's kind of sharp how I say it.
It's like the way you say burger.
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 Burger. Say burger.
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 Fight.
Fight.
Fight. There.
If I'm more relaxed, yeah, it comes out a bit more like fight. Like fight. But if sharp. I'm speaking proper.
So, Mr. and Mrs. Sharp.
I went for a burger and then I had a fight in the takeaway.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Right, focus. Mr. and Mrs. Sharp.
Sharp. Sharp murders.
Okay.
In the early 1990s in Melbourne, Australia, a man by the name of John Miles Sharp was working for the Commonwealth Bank. It was there where he met a woman named Anna Marie Kemp. Anna was a New Zealander and John was from Victoria. Not long after meeting, the two entered into a relationship, and in October of 1994, the couple married. They settled in the seaside suburb of Mornington, south of Melbourne, where John was originally from, and in August of 2002, Anna and John welcomed a child, a daughter named Gracie Louise. Now, Gracie was born with hip dysplasia, and because of this, she needed to wear an orthopaedic harness for the first 3 months of her life.
What is that, like Forrest Gump sort of thing?
No, it's more like a brace around her hips, I believe. So, do you know what hip dysplasia is?
No idea.
It's basically when the joint isn't properly formed, so it can cause it to dislocate.
Displaced. It's displaced.
Dysplasia, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Although this condition was not expected to cause Gracie any long-term issues, it was an incredibly challenging time for both her and her parents. Gracie was unsettled. She cried often and had difficulty sleeping and feeding.
You would do in a brace.
I imagine it wasn't the most comfortable situation for her.
Imagine laying on it.
Well, understandably, this placed quite a bit of strain on John and Anna's relationship. Anna sought help, as she was said to have been experiencing anxiety and feelings of being unable to cope. And she did obtain respite care in order to regulate Gracie's sleeping and eating patterns. And good for her, I can't imagine how tiring that must have been. And Gracie was everything to Anna. She obviously wanted to take care of her to the best of her ability. Her friends described her role as mother to Gracie as being what Anna was living for. So in November of 2003, when Anna became pregnant with the couple's second child, she was thrilled. This was what she had always wanted. Not only to be a mother, but for Gracie to grow up alongside a sibling.
That's that extra money though. Don't come cheap.
Well, John wasn't actually too happy about the news.
Yeah, because he's got to get overtime in there.
Well, it wasn't just that. John had apparently only ever wanted to have one child.
See, is that a common thing? If someone just, they want kids, but then when they have that one, it's like, right, that's it. I think people who really want kids, they just can't stop. No, they just... You know, like, you know when they say, don't get a tattoo, first when you get a tattoo, that's it, you want another.
Well, do you know what it is? When I think of myself having to carry a child and birth the child, one is certainly enough for me.
Dry out your nips.
Yeah.
No, that's enough. I'm not being a prick, I'm just saying.
You know, they can crack and bleed and, you know, it can be a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is when I put myself into the situation, one and done for me, if right. I was to do that, yeah? But when I think of myself growing up, you know, I can't picture myself growing up without a sibling. And I don't come from a big family. I only have one sibling.
Me too.
Yeah, but can you picture having been an only child?
Yes.
Can you?
Yeah.
Oh, you look so happy. You're having a little moment with yourself right now, aren't you?
Yeah. No, I'd have loved to have been an only child.
But would you really have?
Yes.
Okay.
I had enough mates.
It's a different dynamic, though. I don't think we could ever really kind of imagine it.
Having a sibling does teach you...
Patience.
Yeah. Awareness.
Mm-hmm.
you know, because they're always hiding around a fucking door or something, waiting to jump on you and fart on your head. Like,
well, me and my brother got on pretty well growing up, to be fair.
Oh no, me and my brother, we traumatized each other. My brother is, his biggest fear is being buried alive, and that's because of me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my mum's bed was a divan bed and it had drawers in it. And I pulled a drawer out and I said to my brother, I bet you can't fit in that drawer and let it close properly. I think I said something like, you can have a Kit Kat. You can have my Kit Kat for my Easter egg. You can have my Kit Kat for my Easter egg if you can fit in that drawer and let it close. So without giving it a second thought, he jumped in, closed it. I sat up against it with my feet against the wardrobe. Must have been at least 50 minutes, an hour.
To be fair, Kit Kats are nice.
He nearly smashed that bed up from the inside out. Yeah, he was hitting it that hard.
You've given him a lifelong fear now.
Yeah.
Very good. Anyway, back to Anna and John.
Mm-hmm.
Friends of Anna said that they could feel and see the tension between the two over the pregnancy. John had always appeared a more gentle, shy person, but he was becoming more and more hostile towards Anna, and not just around their friends, but also in front of Gracie too. In March of 2004, Anna and John moved into a new home. On Tuesday, the 23rd of March, Anna called their health insurance company at about 2 p.m. to add their unborn child to their coverage. This was the last known contact that Anna ever made to someone outside of her home.
Can you do that? Put someone on coverage before they're even born?
Apparently.
But they ain't even got a name.
I don't know. Because it sounded a bit odd to me. I assume it's to cover any care she needs throughout the pregnancy and the childbirth itself.
Not the kid. All right, okay. That's what I mean. I thought, oh, so the kid is on the coverage.
I'm not entirely sure. That's just what I assumed it was.
Right.
Any listeners, if you work in insurance, let us know.
And don't try and sell us insurance while you're that. No, they do. You could have a mate. You've been mates for 10 years. You go to the pub, have a couple of pints with them, casually. As soon as they get into insurance, they're trying to sell you everything.
Well,
are you covered on this?
You're very much a salesman type mentality built into you.
Yeah, I've never done it at the pub with my mates.
No, but if you did work in insurance, I'm sure you'd give it a bloody good go. On the upcoming Friday, Anna had plans to meet up with one of her friends, but on the Thursday, Anna's friends received a call from John. He tells her that Anna had left him for another man. He then rings another one of Anna's friends to inform her of the same. John also tells them that Anna had left Gracie behind, and this was when her friends became suspicious.
This is another cripping.
Whatever about the difficulty...
Why is that funny?
This is another cripping. Whatever about the difficulties they were facing as a couple, Anna would have never left without her daughter. On Wednesday, the day following Anna's last known contact, there was an unexpected knock on the door. It was the TV repairman who Anna had previously booked. Later, this technician would recall John acting a bit shifty, seemingly not wanting to let him into the home.
See, that's a trade what's died out. TV repairman. Your TV breaks, you just throw it in the bin and go and get a new one now.
Or you take it to get repaired. I only noticed the other day, you took the TV off the wall to paint.
Yeah.
And I noticed there's still a sticker from the repairman on the back of it.
Is there?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's how much notice I pay. Mm. No, but a TV repairman, they'd come round to your house. You'd all be sat around waiting for the TV to come on.
Apparently in Australia.
Mm.
Australia. They call it, I don't know what that was. They call it, or they call them, antenna men.
Antenna men?
Or antenna man, yeah.
Why do I think of ants when you say that?
Because you're thinking of antennas.
Oh, okay.
On Friday the 26th of March, John takes Gracie to preschool. He tells the staff that Anna had left and that Gracie will not be returning as she was going to live with her mother. That same day, Anna's family back in New Zealand are becoming worried. Her mother hadn't spoken to her since Monday and was struggling to make contact. John soon calls Anna's family. He gives them the same story he'd given to Anna's friends. that she had run off with a man and left Gracie behind. But he did tell them that she'd be coming back to pick her up on Monday.
See, like, it really wouldn't work, that lie. You know, say if I did you in. Yeah?
Yeah.
And everyone's like, where's Megan? She ran off with another man. Bollocks. Like, people would be like, no.
What do you mean, no?
Immediately, people would be like, no, she fucking hasn't. It took Megan a year to fucking, like, you wouldn't just run off with a man. I'm not.
What do you mean? Because I'm such like a routine person.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not because you're faithful. Like, it's just you. Even if you were single,
I don't just do stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything has to be thought out.
Yeah.
Like.
The anxiety I would have if I ever did just up and leave.
Like, Megan, I love you, but sometimes it has to be wound in. Like, we could wake up in the morning and I'm still laid in bed. And say if I'm watching telly, you pause it and you just turn to me and you're like, right, so what's the plan? Are we going to the shop today? And I'll be like, I don't know. I haven't thought about it yet. Yeah. Well, I need to know because I'm wanting to wash my hair.
Yeah.
And I need to know whether I'm washing my hair or not.
Yeah.
But if I'm washing my hair, there's cleaning I want to do before I wash my hair. And it's like,
because
Because
I don't want to shower. And then if I'm bumming around the house trying to get a million things, I'll be fucking sweating. I'll be uncomfortable. I want to get a shower, get into my fresh, clean comfies and be like, right, I'm settled now.
Like, at the point you've asked me, the only thing what's gone through my head is I want a coffee. That is it.
Yeah, but you're too relaxed.
I want a coffee. And now I have to decide when and where you're cleaning, washing your hair, and are we going to the shop?
At least I'm upfront. I tell you how I'm feeling. You know where you stand with me. Whereas you, I don't fucking know, because it's like you having a thought in your fucking head about that day.
And at the same time, I'm like, did this twat just pause my fucking telly?
Yeah, well, the TV that I got repaired still has the sticker on. Yeah. No, but the point you're making about how I would be in that situation, Anna was similar. So John had also told Anna's family that this other man she ran off with was also the father of Anna's unborn baby. And Anna's mother's response to this was, we don't do that. You see... You see, Anna came from a devoutly Catholic family, and if she was to not only have had an affair but become pregnant as a result, well, it would have been a very shocking turn of events.
Mm.
It just didn't ring true, and so her family contacted the police. Actually, by the way, it wasn't the family who contacted the police, it was their priest who did it for them. So
there's Catholics and priests in Australia?
Yes.
Hmm.
Well, this is actually New Zealand, where the family are.
Didn't know that either.
What the fuck do you mean? This is like the other day when you said to me, you know, nuns aren't really a thing anymore. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I really didn't think they were. When was the last time you saw a nun?
You thought nuns were extinct or something.
I thought it just died out. Like, you don't see it anymore where there's a rebellious girl and they're like, oh, well, where's Tracy? I ain't seen her for fucking ages. Oh, they sent her to Nunneridge. Sort of. It's a nunnerage, isn't it?
Convent.
Are they not called a nunnerage?
A nunnerage.
Yeah.
Is a nunnery? Nunnery? Is that what you mean?
Nunnerage.
Convent. You send them to a convent.
Yeah.
Mm.
You don't hear of that anymore.
So what, you want to bring back nuns?
I never said I want to bring... So they are gone?
No. There's not as many, I would say, now. There's not as many people entering into that.
No, I don't.
But there's still some nuns kicking about.
Like, I know they're not all bad, but no, they don't need that anymore. No, some of them were fucking evil, weren't they? You know, if you chewed on the left-hand side of your mouth and they were like, no, chew on your right, and then beat you with a ruler in the name of Christ. Like.
I mean, that's kind of teachers the world over, though.
Yeah, they're just a bit rough.
Much now, but like you're saying about the left-hand side of your mouth. I mean, obviously you're taking that from left-handed people getting their knuckles fucking wrapped.
I actually heard that someone came up with a slur for left-handed people. Amazing. ink draggers.
Yeah, that is actually a good one. I'll give you that. I'm very protective of left-handed people, though.
Hmm.
We get shit on nonstop. So anyway, Anna's family's priest contact the police for them.
Yeah.
Now, police initially didn't think much of this report. They thought that she could well have left her husband for someone else, and possibly because the family were religious and the backlash that she may have faced, she would not have necessarily been too forthcoming with this information.
Yeah.
But regardless of this, they do begin to investigate. When they speak with a nurse at the health centre that Anna had attended, she told them that Anna had seemed upset by her husband's reaction to the pregnancy. Police are then informed that John had called again. He told them that Anna had come to collect Gracie on Sunday the 28th of March and left in a taxi. So police ring around all the taxi firms in the area, and they find out that no such pickup had been made from his address. Bear in mind, the investigation started in New Zealand. So once the police there had investigated and felt that there was a genuine cause for concern, they then passed it on to the Victoria Police on the 20th of May.
Yeah, I wonder how, I don't know how it works with Australia and New Zealand. Like, is it like the UK and Ireland? Like it's,
I would imagine it's something similar.
Yeah. Like they will cross over. But then I don't know how it works. If you have a UK criminal who's gone on the run, you know, like we've said before, it's either Spain or Ireland, you know, and then the Irish, they'll go over to the UK. I don't know why you'd do that, because there is that crossover, that like mutual ground. So like, say if, right, I've moved to Ireland. Say I was on the run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did something in the UK and then I fled over here. The UK police can still investigate over here. And vice versa.
No, they can't. No.
Oh, I thought they could.
No. There's more leeway for them to work together. There's an understanding. There's agreements put in place.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, they can, it's not like the British police can just kind of bomb over here and be like, we're taking over.
Not that they're taking over.
Yeah.
But they can just come over here and look for me.
Basically, there's the understanding. No, like, so the guards would investigate. But they would work together if that was the case.
Right.
Do you get what I mean? I'm saying this as like, you know, like I'm in the force and like, here, yeah, this is what happens. But to the best of my understanding, that's the case.
Just in case there is any PC plods listening, I'm not on the run.
Oh, I know. There's police listening. I mean, actual like listeners of the podcast. I don't mean they're listening in to us.
Yeah.
I mean, they might be.
Take that tinfoil hat off.
Anyway, they passed the investigation on to the Victoria Police.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they also thought something was off. Anna was married with a child and another one on the way. When looking into her background, everything pointed towards Anna being responsible and settled. It would have been totally out of character for her to do this. So, of course, they start with the husband, and police interview John and get a statement. But this didn't do much to ease their suspicion. A few days later, while police run surveillance on John, they see him go to the bushes beside a public toilet in Mornington. He retrieves a blue plastic bag and takes out what looks to be a credit card, and then places the bag back into the bushes. Police then collect this bag and find Anna's mobile phone and debit card. So they're now fairly certain that there's foul play and that old Johnny boy is the one behind it all.
Mm.
On the 26th of May, 2004, 2 months following the disappearance, John made a televised appeal to the public. He asked for anyone who knew anything to please come forward, if not to him, then to the police. But those close to the family were again suspicious of John's behaviour, and so were the police. The officer who took John's statement said that, during the interview, John was more matter-of-fact and consistent in his answers, even stating that he doesn't really care where Anna is, he just wanted to find Gracie. Whereas during the appeal to the public, he seemed a bit more flustered and emotional, and suddenly it wasn't just his daughter that he was worried about. He became the concerned husband. It was all a bit much compared to the statement. They felt that the way he was speaking and how his eyes were darting about told that he knew more.
So you'd think he'd be smarter than that.
What you mean, just be consistent?
Be consistent.
Anna left me, I'm mad at her, yeah. But I want my daughter back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense why you just change it up and it's like, you're doing that in front of the cops.
Yeah. Not the sharpest knife in the block.
Yeah.
Nah? You like that one?
Yeah, I've heard that one before.
No, his name is John Sharp.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
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 Not the strongest ant on the field.
Is that a saying?
No, I just made it up.
Oh.
But ant, because of...
Antenna man. Antenna. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, when police run checks on the phone and bank card, they find out that flowers had been sent to Anna's mother using her debit card, and cash withdrawals had also been made in the Chelsea suburb. When they check Anna's phone, they see that calls had been made from this phone since her disappearance. Emails had also been sent to Anna's brother claiming to be from her. The email states that she was well and happy, and that she had left John and Gracie was with her. After this, police feel that they have enough evidence to arrest John on the 22nd of June. Now, after his arrest, police interview John again. At first, John sticks with his story, but after several hours and being given the opportunity to speak with his family, John starts to talk. Back on the 23rd of March, John and Anna went to bed between 9 and 10 p.m. following an argument. Anna falls asleep, while John lay awake, stewing over the argument, among his other grievances.
Never go to bed angry on an argument. Try and solve it. There's nothing worse.
No, I agree with you.
Oh, look what happened to Anna.
But you don't know what happened to Anna yet.
Well, I'm guessing he fucking did her in. Because he couldn't sleep, because she wouldn't solve the argument.
Finally, John decides to get up and go to the garage. This is where he retrieves his spear gun. He re-enters the bedroom, aims the gun towards Anna's head, and fires at close range, hitting her in the temple.
With a spear?
Yep.
Fucking hell!
But this shot did not kill her. He quickly reloads and shoots Anna again. He then covers her in towels and goes downstairs to sleep on the sofa bed. In the morning, John attempts to remove the spears which he had left in Anna's head. Unable to do so, he removes the shafts and leaves the spearhead lodged in her skull. He then drags her body down the stairs and into the garden. He buries her in a shallow grave which he had already dug.
Pretty mad.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty mad. Done.
100%. On Saturday, the 27th of March, 4 days after murdering Anna, John places 19-month-old Gracie into her cot at about 9 p.m. that evening. He throws back a few whiskey and cokes to get the nerve up before, once again, retrieving his spear gun. John stands over the cot and fires a shot into the left side of Gracie's head.
What?
As with Anna, the first blow did not kill her. And so, John shoots her a second and a third time. But Gracie was still alive. As she screamed in pain, John pulls one of the spears out of her head and fires yet again. Gracie finally dies as a result of this torturous attack. And just to illustrate how much of a sadistic fucking prick this man is, as we mentioned, when Anna was killed, it took more than one shot. He would have known there was a chance of this happening again. So instead of being prepared, he left Gracie in excruciating pain midway through this attack to go and retrieve more spear shafts.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, I feel like it doesn't really need stating when you're already using a fucking spear gun to annihilate your family, but you know what I mean? It's prolonging the suffering of this little girl.
I'm sorry, like, who the fuck owns a spear gun anyway? Other than your man on How I Met Your Mother? Like, who the fuck has a spear gun?
People who fish. That's kind of the immediate thought for a spear gun.
What the fuck are they fishing with a spear gun? Isn't that for sharks and that?
No.
Well, it's not for trout, is it?
The following morning, John goes to Gracie and removes the spears. He said that as he was doing this, He covered his face with a towel, as he did not want to have to witness the aftermath of what he had done. He then wraps her body in bin bags, followed by a tarpaulin and duct tape.
Fucking no, no, no. Take the towel off. Look what you've done.
He brings her body, along with a spear gun, spears, and some of her clothing and toys, to the dump. Gracie had lost her life for no other reason than for John to continue his lie and conceal the fact that he had murdered her mother, Anna. A couple of days later, John purchases two tarps, duct tape, and a chainsaw. He then digs up Anna's remains and dismembers her. He cut her body into three sections, which he then wrapped up in the tarps. He also disposed of her body in the dump. And finally, he gets rid of the blood-soaked mattress.
But it's not just the blood-soaked mattress, because he dragged her down the stairs. There'll be blood all over the house.
Well, he's probably wrapped her up while transferring the body, I would imagine.
Right.
Also, bear in mind, after he had killed Anna, he left her there overnight. So the mattress has soaked up a lot of blood. Other blood would have started to dry. So it's not, you know, the immediate. Now, following John's confession, police begin the process of attempting to recover the bodies, which by now would have been sent to the landfill. The search for the bodies gets underway in late June, and of course, it's a difficult and dangerous job. But many officers did volunteer in hopes to bring some closure to Anna and Gracie's family. After a few days, they do manage to find part of Anna's remains. And by mid-July, all of Anna's remains are recovered. And then they find Gracie. Which is unbelievable that they were able to find them, and thank God they did. You know, some people can't fathom the idea of working in the death industry. You know, the idea of, say, conducting an autopsy. That's a lot.
Yeah.
But search and recovery teams are, in my opinion, next level. Very different to go in there not knowing if you're going to find something, exactly what state the body's going to be in. You know, anyone who does this is a fucking champ. Mm. You really are.
Yeah. And you gotta think, end of June, mid-July, in Australia? But then that'd be their winter.
Mm.
They're opposite to us, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, Australia, it'd still be warm enough, I'd imagine. But it is seaside.
Australians, let us know. Your winter, what's the weather like? Is it still like our summer weather?
Melbourne area.
Yeah.
July. Let us know. Marvellous Melbourne.
Just speaking on, you know, people who have to deal with the bodies, just to give you an example, this was medical students. They got called into a room and the doctor just whipped the white sheet off. It got a dead body on the
The
table. And it were all opened up so you could see all the insides.
It was the nerves and stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah. Every single one of them were like throwing up, fainting, fucking. This is people in the medical industry.
Mm.
So yeah, you imagine you haven't got a clue what you're going to find. And then you stumble across it.
Do you think you could participate in a search and recovery?
Yes. I'd hope to God I wasn't the one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To come across, but yeah, I'd have to.
Mm.
Yeah. Because you got to think for the families. They need closure.
Yeah, I think I would as well. I think, you know, the desire to help these people out would kind of overtake. But, I mean, you can never be repaired. Repaired. Antenna man. You can never be prepared for what you're potentially going to find.
Yeah. Like, you've got a stronger stomach than me. So I think if we were helping on a search and I came across something and I was like, looks like it could be something under that, I'd be like, Megan, have a look.
Megan, you suffer the trauma of this. Take one for the team, Megan, will you, for fuck's sake?
I found it. Now you do the easy bit.
Joint effort.
Yeah.
Once both Anna and Gracie's bodies were recovered, a funeral service was held for them in Mornington. They chose to do so in Australia before bringing them back to New Zealand, as Anna did have a life there and a lot of friends, and as well as those who knew Gracie from attending preschool in the area, and also, don't forget, members of John's family as well.
Mm.
Anna was 41 years old and 5 months into her pregnancy at the time of her death. She, her daughter Gracie, and her unborn son Francis were buried in Green Park Cemetery in New Zealand, with Anna's family name displayed on the gravestone. I really love that detail, that they were like, not putting that name on it.
Yeah, no, that is good that they used her family name. Like, you know, there's stuff like, do you remember when we covered the Kenny Carter case? I don't get that.
Yeah.
And then what was the other one where they moved his body to be buried with the family?
Lawson family murders. He was, they were all buried together.
Like,
it's a weird one because it's not for us to say, but it seems very odd that they would choose to.
Disrespectful.
That's my immediate thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, you mentioned the spear gun being an odd choice.
Well, if that's all he had, what I'm saying is, who has one to hand?
Well, John didn't have one to hand. In January of 2004, John purchased the spear gun from Sport Philip Marine in Mornington. He also bought an additional spear and paid cash for the transaction. Now, John didn't spearfish and had no apparent use for the weapon, but still, he was said to have practiced firing the gun in the garden. He later told investigators that at the time of the purchase, he had thought about killing Anna.
Who's Philip?
That's the name of the shop, Sport Philip Marine.
Doesn't make any fucking sense.
Now, after John had killed Anna with the spear gun, like we said, he struggled to remove the spearheads. John had actually took Gracie with him to the shop to buy more spears, which he would then use to kill her.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He would later tell the police about the murder of Gracie. It was an act of, quote, irrational bloody madness and, quote, I was thinking of taking care of Gracie by myself and just amongst all this madness, that's when I lost the plot.
Right, sorry. You know how bad this case is?
Mm-hmm.
Right, so at first he was lying, you know, she was shagging about, she's left me for another man and all this.
Yeah, he completely demonised her in the process. Yeah.
But then it got to the point where he's confessing.
Yeah.
If I did all this, I don't think I could say I've done all this. I think my confession would be, I killed her. And if they're like, how? I can't say it. What would the police do if I was like, look, I'm telling you, I killed her?
That's, you know, you don't want to give anything to John. But that's the only thing you can say from after the fact, at least you're giving them all the information.
Yeah.
You're going, do you know what? I've done it.
Yeah.
Fuck it, if I'm going to talk, I'm going to tell you everything.
But I wonder what the police would do if I were like, look, I physically can't. I don't want anyone to know how bad I was, but I killed her.
The murder of Gracie is so horrifically disturbing.
Yeah.
You know, like I said to you, it's not just four shots he fired into his daughter's head. The idea of him pulling the spear out while she's still alive to fire again, leaving her to go and retrieve more spears. It's fucking unimaginable. Would you like to hear why John said he murdered Anna?
Because he didn't want the second kid.
He said that he murdered Anna because she was, quote, controlling and moody, and that their marriage was an unhappy one.
What's that got to do with Gracie? Angie could just leave.
Well, I was going to say, what's that got to do with murder?
Yeah, you could be a weekend dad.
He also said that she had prevented him from seeing his family as often as he would have liked. Now, whether that's true or not, I mean, you live in the area where you're from.
Yeah.
You can always go see them and tell her, get fucked. Yeah. If that was the case. I mean, she's the one who's actually living away from home. She's from New Zealand. She's out there in fucking Australia.
Mm.
You cheeky bastard. During psychological evaluations, it was determined that John's life had been fairly unremarkable. Of his own admission, John did struggle socially in his younger years. He didn't enjoy his time at school and failed his year 12 exams. But he did go on to get a job in the bank and then went into a conveyancy business. So, he fucking did all right.
No, how the fuck did he get a job in a bank if he didn't even pass school? Do you think I could have got a job in a bank?
Well, I think a job in the bank, like, it can be entry level and then you work your way up. Do you know what I mean?
It fucking absolutely is not. To get a job in a bank?
Yeah.
No.
No.
You need good ma- What was that?
What?
What was that?
Huh?
That, what you just did.
What? I said no.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never gone for a job in the bank.
It's all math. And...
They give you a calculator, surely. John didn't seem to be suffering from any health issues other than going to his doctors in the weeks previous to the murders. He complained about his disturbed sleep, for which he was prescribed sleeping pills. He was subsequently diagnosed with depression on the 1st of June, but this was with his doctor under the belief that John was the poor, suffering husband whose wife had left him for another man, was pregnant by this other man, and had also had his child taken from him.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. He had prescription sleeping tablets.
Yeah.
And he decided to use a spear gun.
Yeah.
Like, right, you've got something against your missus. Right, there's some hatred there. But there's no hatred to fucking Gracie. So why, and it's only a, I was about to say only a child. May explain. I mean, it's only a child as in the size of the child.
Yeah.
It wouldn't take a lot. I wasn't going to say it's only a child.
No, you mean the very literal size of the child, yeah.
So I would have used the sleeping tablets. It'd have been a lot more, I was going to say pleasant for Gracie. I don't know how to say
no,
this
sort it wouldn't
of thing.
Have been as cruel, as vicious, as aggressive,
yeah,
as just, prolonged.
They'd have died in the sleep. They'd have fell asleep and not woke up. So why did he go for the spear?
Yeah.
If he had prescription sleeping tablets. Do you know how, like, I don't know in Australia, and I know it's probably easier in America because it is a lot easier to get prescription meds, but over here in the UK, prescription sleeping tablets, you need a reason.
Yeah.
They will not just give you them.
No.
So he had his hands on prescription sleeping tablets and still used a spear.
Mm.
Evil.
Madness. Say it.
Not the band.
There you go. The doctor also concluded that Paul was in a state of agitation and suffering from poor memory and lack of concentration. But this is understandable given the constant act he was trying to maintain.
Hmm.
Bear in mind, this was 2 months he was keeping this up. The forensic psychiatrist who examined John said that he was socially inept, dependent, passive, and a retiring individual who was unable or reluctant to confront problems. He believed that John saw the issues in his marriage as irresolvable and that he believed the only conclusion was to kill Anna. John was also described by a forensic psychologist as being inadequate, isolated, and withdrawn. Someone who was very dependent on his parents and lacked the psychological resources to cope with difficulties in life.
I described him as a twat.
Well, this is it. In layman's terms, a little mammy's boy bitch.
Yeah.
As John pleaded guilty to 2 counts of murder, he showed no emotion. The judge described John's crimes as egregiously wicked and singular in its barbarity. That he showed no genuine remorse for the murders. He said, quote, Gracie was a defenseless child who was your legal and moral responsibility. You killed her simply so that your first crime would not be discovered. For the murders of Anna and Gracie, John was sentenced to 2 life sentences with a minimum of 33 years to be served. John will be 71 before he becomes eligible for parole. His mother said of his sentence, quote, John's crimes were horrific, and he will serve the sentence given. He has given himself a life sentence.
Fair play. I was on the edge of my seat. I was about to kick off. I thought she was going to be, oh, he's not all bad.
Well, I don't know if, you know, maybe she agrees with the sentence, but possibly is supportive of him after the fact. One of his nieces, who describes herself as one of the, quote, non-supportive family members of John Sharp, well, she said, quote, we also send our heartfelt condolences to Anna's family in New Zealand, whose pain and suffering is tremendous. So it's just that, like, one of the non-supportive.
Mm.
The fact that she feels the need to state that.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, there is an alternative theory as to why John killed Anna and Gracie.
Another bird?
No.
Oh. That's usually the case.
So, these claims have not been substantiated, but according to family letters, John had a history of abusing children. There's been claims that years previous, John had sexually abused younger members of his family. It has been theorized that Anna may have discovered that John had been abusing Gracie. In a letter written by a relative of his, quote, "I became his prey for 2 years, and he always kept that power. His smell still haunts me."
Makes more sense than we went to bed on an argument.
Well, outside of this theory, because again, this is just a theory, it's a claim.
Mm.
There's nothing to say this is the reason why he did what he did. The tension between them was building for months.
Yeah.
John bought the weapon in January, so he had months to prepare and think about this. She was 5 months into her pregnancy. John was pissed for a while.
Mm.
Now, this abuse was said to have taken place 20 years before the murders, and the relative who spoke up about it, she did so 5 years previous to the murder.
Right.
She told police that since finding out that Anna and Gracie went missing, she felt tormented by the fact that she never went to the police to report him and potentially stop the murders from happening.
Yeah, yeah.
Quote, "I fear the day he is released. I fear for my own life and for that of my children. He is a dangerous monster. John Sharp has robbed me of so much, and it has not been easy living with the continued pain of lost innocence, fear, and guilt from his actions. And now his more recent and most hideous crimes has truly added to the mixture of fear, guilt, and disgust that I have. John hasn't just snapped as of recent times. He has always been sick, manipulative, and sly, but none of you were ever privy enough to see that side of him." 2 years following the murders, John and Anna's home went up for sale. It was listed as a, quote, "charming seaside dream home. Adorable two-story home lets you live the dream lifestyle every day."
But I thought it was like, I don't know if it's one of them where it's an unwritten rule or it is actually a law. But if there's if a murder's took place, you have to say it.
Yeah, so they did have to disclose this information. And of course, for some, the history of what had happened within the home was too much to bear. One woman said, quote, "When I saw the outline of where the baby's furniture had been, I felt awful. You would think about it every time you walk up the stairs."
Yeah.
So yeah, it is quite heavy. And yes, you're right. They did have to disclose this information. But that is the Sharp family murders. Neil, any comments?
I think the theory makes more sense.
Mm.
You know, like, it's not enough that there was just tension and they'd had a row and all that. No.
You don't think the idea that he was a little bastard and was basically like, "This isn't what I want, I'm going to fix it," in his mind?
Yeah, he's a fucking idiot. I don't know.
Like they said, little mammy's boy.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm.
I think both are very plausible. I don't know myself. Yeah. But one thing I will say is there was no impulsivity to this crime. He thought about it. He made a decision which he thought would be best for him.
Yeah.
And whether that's, you know, like I said, either side of that argument.
The bit I don't get. So he killed Anna. And the reason why he killed Gracie was because he's killed Anna.
Yes, he had to hide the crime and perpetuate the story that Anna had come to collect Gracie.
Couldn't he have just had it so he killed Anna? Because his initial lie was, "She's ran off with another bloke,"
mm-hmm.
who is the father of the baby she's pregnant with.
Yeah, he could have had it that Anna was starting over with a new family, so to speak.
And he could have just carried on with Gracie.
Yeah. Yep.
What an asshole.
Yeah.
Like,
and it's not just the premeditation of the situation, but this went on for days. He murdered Anna, then he buried her the following day. A few days go by, he murders Gracie.
Yeah.
He then conceals her body the following day. He then exhumes Anna's body, dismembers her, and disposes of her body. Never mind all the other misdeeds and deceptive acts to conceal the crimes and maintain his story. Mm. That's a, like, the really intense murder and concealment part. That was days. That's the best part of a week.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Something else to bear in mind as well. Through John's lies, he was taking up valuable resources. Like I said, this was 2 months.
Mm.
All the other people in cases that needed the attention, John was taking from that.
Yeah.
Just to fucking go and play the grieving husband to conceal what he had done. He's a piece of fucking shit.
At least.
Oh, one other bit I wanted to mention. During one of John's, you know, his little setup phone calls.
Yeah.
To kind of keep the story going. He was reported to have said to Anna's mother that Gracie is now with Anna in a, quote, bigger and better place. Bit weird sounding.
Yeah. Fucking Catholics coming out again.
What?
Well, he obviously mean in heaven.
I don't know if John was Catholic.
Oh.
Okay. It was more so focused on that Anna's family were very religious.
Right. Well, yeah, like she said, hope he never gets out. I don't think he will. I don't think he will ever get out.
I mean, I hope he doesn't, but...
I don't know what the Australian prison system's like.
Well, see, there was also the argument put forth about John that, you know, will he necessarily reoffend again? Because in this case, they were looking at it like he did this to suit him. It wasn't like a vicious attack randomly on a person. Do you get what I mean? No, I'm saying from their point of view of... deciding the sentencing and all this.
Yeah, but he did a lot.
No,
Of a little. Do you know, like...
No, yeah, I completely agree with you. I don't think...
Someone could cut him. So if they release it, the way they need to be looking at it is if they release him, someone could do something what's not that fucking bad, like cut him up on the road and he butchers him.
No, I fully agree with you. I don't think that's enough for leeway to kind of let some... I think that applies to someone who's been in... say an abusive relationship and let's say it's not in the heat of the moment, but they've snapped and they've killed them in their sleep or something because they're not going through it anymore.
Yeah.
That I can understand parole.
And I didn't mean butcher them. Someone could cut him up and he gets his spear gun out. Fucking spear gun. Fucking Australians, like who has a spear gun?
John Sharp.
So oddity.
Death by chicken.
Okay, let's see where this is going.
Can you?
Yes.
You sure?
Pecking.
67-year-old Jasper Kraus, originally from the Netherlands, had moved to Galway in the mid-90s and eventually settled in Roscommon. Now, on his property lived a particularly difficult rooster. He actually began living with Jasper after he was moved there following an attack on a child. On the 22nd of April, 2022, the Brahma chicken in question dug his spur into Jasper's left calf, puncturing a vein. Casper then walked back into his home, leaving a trail of blood behind him. Paramedics were called to the scene, but it was too late. His daughter and the Gardaí arrived on scene to find Jasper laid on the floor in a pool of blood. His cause of death was due to lethal cardiac arrhythmia in the context of severe coronary atheroma and cardiomegaly. Also a contributing factor was that the blood supply to his heart was, quote, severely calcified. So now, to be fair, Jasper was already in poor health, having dealt with heart failure, renal failure and diabetes. Meaning, yes, this chicken was a little bollocks, but it was the perfect storm type of situation.
Yeah.
And his poor daughter, she had actually arrived at the home just a few hours previous to drop off his shopping, but she didn't actually get the chance to speak with her father. He had been asleep as his Yorkie dog, Krista, had recently died, and he was quite upset about it, so she decided to just let him rest.
Understandable over a Yorkie.
We all love a Yorkie.
We do.
It's thought that when he was in the garden, He'd actually been out back at Krista's grave when the chicken attacked him.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. Now, Jasper himself seemed to have been a bit of a character. He had a love of music and animals, in particular, horses. He had worked with them most of his life, including on film sets and stunt riding. While in Ireland, he worked with young and anxious horses and became known as a horse whisperer. He also attempted to break the world record for the longest time spent continuously on horseback, and this was to raise money for children in need.
Oh.
Now, he failed to beat the record of 127 hours, as he was ordered off by a doctor. But he did do 72 hours.
Fucking hell.
He also developed a blood clot in his leg.
You couldn't do 72 seconds.
No, absolutely fucking not. It was said that he rode around the green for 3 days and three nights, quote, living off coffee, cigarettes and rolls.
Way of life.
At 6'3", with his unique style, quote, the sight of him striding into town or riding a horse was a sight to behold. Now, the rooster is no more, by the way. And Jasper's daughter had actually wanted to get rid of the bird as he had also attacked her child. His daughter, Virginia, she also now is in possession of his African grey parrot who shouts at her, Gina, coffee, mimicking her father's Dutch accent. She said that it's actually a comforting reminder of her father, as if he's in the next room, she said.
It would be like you after I've gone, if you had a parrot going, Asse!
Yes, very much so. But there you go. Pour one out for Jasper.
Yeah, I do feel bad for Jasper, but it did make me think of something, this. I'm still infuriated by it.
What's that?
So I was looking at ramen noodles.
Mm-hmm.
This was a couple of weeks ago. And I'd made myself some noodles and you went, oh, what flavour of, what? Which noodles are you eating? And I said, Peking duck. And you were trying to tell me it was Peking.
It is.
It's clearly Peking duck.
It's
like
Peking.
This fucking rooster pecked. Peking. Peking duck.
I promise you, it's not.
Well, I'm going to leave it to our listeners. It's fucking Peking duck.
Okay.